What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Pickleball Connection podcast. I'm Danae.
And I'm Barrett. We're super excited to have you back for another episode. And in today's episode, we're going to continue with this theme of Cruise the News, or CTN, as we're calling it, where we scan the internet for a juicy pickleball forums, stuff that's really relatable to your local rec nights, as well as news articles, and just talk about the latest kind of buzz, what's happening in the pickleball world. So let's go ahead and jump into it. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's roll.
Hey, real quick before we jump in, we just want to mention Selkirk's Nets. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting in pickleball, Selkirk has the best nets available. Not only are they the preferred net of the PPA Tour, but there are many options for all pickleball levels. If you're just starting out and wanting to grab a pickleball net, go to selkirk.com/collections/nets to find the best nets on the market. All right, let's jump right into Cruise the News, and we are going to start with a tweet. Now, I'm sure you saw, but there's a tweet that went out there from a top-level professional pickleball player this week. It got over 1.4 million impressions, and it took the pickleball and tennis world by storm. This is what Christian Alshon tweeted this week. "Pickleball has made me a much better athlete than tennis ever did. Faster reaction time and speed are needed since the ball's only coming from 10 feet away. Point for point, pickleball requires more skill than tennis." Now, people were going off in the comments. You had top-level professional tennis players coming at Christian. You didn't have many professional pickleball players defending Christian. But I want to hear your thoughts on this. Why do you think he tweeted this, and what's kind of your take?
Oh, gosh. Here's the thing. If I'm being just completely honest, I've never played tennis, so it's very hard for me to give like really good feedback on this. I can definitely say, for those of you who don't know, Christian Alshon does have a tennis background. That's actually where he came and how he transitioned to pickleball. That being said, I don't know much about his tennis career, but to say that one requires more skill than the other is kind of hard for me. It's almost like saying hockey requires more skill than baseball, or you know what I mean? I think they both require a lot of skills.
Yeah.
And I think that the skills are probably different in a lot of ways too. And I'm sure if you talk to any high level tennis player, even, you know, Jack Sock is a really prolific tennis player that's transitioned to pickleball, I'm sure he would tell you that pickleball has different skills than tennis. I don't think one is better than the other. I don't think one is worse than the other. So I don't know if I can completely agree with Christian on this.
Do you think he just did it for engagement?
I think he might have just done it to ruffle some feathers.
Mission accomplished.
Which, yeah. I kind of like. But if you guys honestly should, if you just want some entertainment, go check out X or Twitter, whatever we're calling it now, and go read the posts. There's a bunch of professional tennis players that just were going off. Sam Querrey got involved. Like, it's funny. It's really, really funny.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think where he kind of made ruffled feathers was he used the word athleticism. And I think to his point, it maybe does, you know, pickleball maybe does require more skill in some areas than tennis. There's a lot more finesse shots. There's more, you know, quick reaction times is what he was getting at. However, athleticism may be a little bit different than skill. You know, some of these top tennis athletes, as far as what they can do with their fitness and their cardio, you know, I'm not saying that pickleball isn't a good form of exercise, but I think that's where people kind of got upset, was he was using the word athleticism in conjunction with skill. Yeah. And so, but I see what he's saying. You know, it does require pickleball does at the high level require a unique set of skills.
And here's the thing. I do think that there is like this underlying feud between tennis and pickleball that I truly cannot figure out. So I actually posted on my platform, All Things Pickleball, about this girl that sent this post out on social media. She's a tennis influencer. And she basically did this post where she was claiming that pickleball shouldn't even be considered a good form of exercise.
Mm.
And I kind of gotten into my first internet fight.
Yeah, what'd you say?
Well, I just thought, like, look, I'm not here to say tennis is, well, I actually am here to say pickleball is better than tennis, but to each their own. If you like tennis, great. I like pickleball, great. I think both are great. But for someone to claim that pickleball is a dumb sport, it doesn't require athleticism, that it's not a great form of exercise. Like, I was reading those comments and they were so brutal. It was like, pickleball shouldn't even be considered a sport. And you can't take this sport seriously. Only singles pickleball can give you a good workout. And I'm just like, that's not true. And asking you, like, you play pickleball, you've also played other sports growing up. Like, if someone told you pickleball isn't a sport, like, how would you handle that?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't take it well.
Yeah.
I just love pickleball. I mean, obviously we're here doing a pickleball podcast.
We're biased.
We're both in pickleball full time. We love it. But yeah, I think, you know, I understand, because I think pickleball got this rap for a long time about being for old people. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing more and more the young generation grab a hold of this. We're seeing a bunch of former tennis players that actually played professional or high level college D1 tennis transition into pickleball. And, you know, to the point of what this kind of whole tweet was about, you know, I haven't really seen a bunch of high level tennis players come into pickleball and have immediate success. You know, I think it does require a specific set of skills. There is a big learning curve. And I think that people are under the impression that top tennis players can come master the sport right away. And when you look at the sample size of tennis players that have come into pickleball, that's just not true. Now, for me, I know there have been times when I'm out playing, and I think the thing about pickleball is you can play for 4 or 5 hours, and it's so much fun, and it's so social and interactive that you look down at your, you know, sometimes I look at my watch to see like how many calories I burned or any of that, but like you look down and you're like, wow, I just got a lot of good exercise in. And to me, while it might not be as much running or sliding, there is a lot of quick movement that happens. And as you get to the higher level, those rallies get longer and longer. If you're dinking correctly, you're like pretty low, almost close to maybe not in a full squat, but you are exercising a lot of those big muscles and kind of those isometric movements. So, I mean, I think pickleball requires a ton of athleticism.
Yeah, I think so too. And to whoever's point that said only singles, like, that's not true. Like, I was playing doubles yesterday and it was 3 hours I was out, and I think my watch said 1200 calories.
Wow.
And so, you know, not that it's all about calories or whatever, but the point is pickleball is very active, and I would consider myself in really good shape, and to burn that much over that period of time, I'm like, that's pretty legit. So I guess I'm saying all this to say pickleball does require skill. It does help your athleticism, and it's considered and should be considered an incredible sport and a great form of exercise. I just don't know how you can argue against that.
Well, I've also seen, you know, stories of people who have lost tons of weight finding pickleball.
Absolutely.
Which is really cool, considering that, you know, because there is a big learning curve when you transition from tennis to pickleball, but the barrier of entry is so much more approachable than tennis. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it allows people maybe that are a little overweight, are a little out of shape, to get moving, you know, and mm-hmm. to enjoy it and to not, you know, get discouraged when they can't track down a tennis ball. But, you know, I really do think that it, you know, the higher the skill level gets, the longer the rallies get. And it can be, do you remember when we were in like Austin, we were outside of Austin in the summer?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. There's this facility that we played at. Like this indoor,
no air conditioning,
middle of the summer in Texas. And we were all like, there was sweat dripping out of our shoes.
Gross.
I'm like, people need to like open up a business, like not like hot yoga, but like hot pickleball, you know, like we were sweating so much.
Gross.
And, but I mean, I love that feeling. I love, you know, going out and really getting a good sweat in, moving your body. And I think pickleball definitely allows you to do that.
So if you guys are watching on our YouTube channel, go ahead and comment below. Do you think, what do you think about one, Christian Alshon's tweet, and two, just about pickleball being a legitimate sport or not. Would love to hear your thoughts. Should we go on to the next one?
Let's go on to the next one.
Okay. This next one has to do with rec play and specifically challenge courts. So I'm going to go ahead and read this post. And it starts off by somebody saying, I wanted to see people's thoughts on challenge courts. Do you think we should have them or not, and why? If we should have them, how many nights a week and how many challenge courts, and so on and so forth. So first, I want to explain to people if they don't know what a challenge court is. So really quickly, challenge court is basically when winners stay on the court. So if you're playing doubles, whoever, whatever team wins, they get to stay on the court and then two people rotate in. So that being said, to this person's question, what do you think about having challenge courts at rec nights? What are the positives, and then what are potential negatives?
Yeah, I think, you know, so for example, there's a local park that a lot of people play at in our hometown where we live right now. And the way that it's kind of set up are there are three challenge courts at all, and there's, but the court is six courts. It's divided into kind of an advanced side and a not advanced side or a beginner side, but all three of the courts are basically two off, two on. So if you win, you stay on the courts, mm-hmm. but then within that, there's usually one court where you can go challenge, you know, you can go, it's kind of where people want to play the top of the top. So I think that people do this because they want structure, but I think the problem is that people can get frustrated with long wait times.
Yeah.
It's not like you're playing and then all four players are coming off the court, but mm-hmm. you're playing a match and only two players are coming off the court. And so, you know, if you win, you stay. It's like winner stays. Like I remember pickup basketball growing up, you know, make it, take it kind of thing, you know? So I think that it allows for some competition, which I think people like, but I think people do get frustrated with long wait times. I know you love long wait times.
LOL. I don't like long wait times. And here's what I would say. I don't know if you finished your thought, but challenge courts are great for advanced players and I think frustrating for intermediate and beginner players. Because the reality is, if you're a beginner, you know you'll never win those games. You'll never be able to stay on the court. But what the challenge court does do is it gives advanced players incentive to show up at a rec night.
Right.
And so I could see why it's beneficial, because then you're inviting advanced players into the rec night culture, and then you get to kind of like try your hand at competing with them. What's cool is, you know, I really appreciate Travis Rettenmeyer. He's a pickleball pro that lives in our city, and he shows up at the rec court nights and he basically kind of runs a court for the night. And it's actually really fun getting to play against him because he's a legit touring pro. And I think part of the reason why he continues to show up at that rec night is because he knows that that whole night he's going to be able to get play in. He's going to get, you know, touches on the ball in that whole night because he's never rotating off the court. But again, to what you said, that negative is it does kind of bring in longer wait times for other players.
Right. And I think that every court is set up a little bit different. And so I think maybe a solution to this is if your city doesn't have like a Facebook page or a group, I know that a previous city we lived in kind of had organized times for specific levels that would show up on Mondays and Wednesday nights from 5 to 8. It's 3:05 to 4:00. And they kind of had allotted times. Now, if you don't, like I said, the way our court set up here, the court that a lot of us play at, it's most nights, it's three advanced courts and then three beginner courts. And so you have a lot of players trying to rotate onto three courts because you're either advanced or you're either beginner. So it is. I know that like I've gone out there before and if you lose the first match, which we lost one time when we went out there, the very first match, and then I'm putting my paddle back in this paddle rack system and now I'm waiting another, you know, 40 minutes to get on the court. And that's just not fun for people, but I think other people really do like that it it adds more a more competitive tournament type like mm-hmm. feel, because there's more on the line if you lose. So again, I think it's this balance of you have people that want different levels of competition, and I think that's okay. But I think what people have to figure out and navigate within their pickleball community is, are there places with rating specific nights, or how do I rotate in and get in games with my level, but also have the opportunity to play? Because as we talked on a previous podcast, a lot of people want to play better players, and a challenge court is kind of a way that you can do that.
It's a way to incentivize higher level players to stay. So an interesting case study actually happened in one of the suburbs of Orlando where we used to live. This pickleball court or park actually ended up kind of taking out the challenge court, and all the advanced players left because they didn't want to have to rotate four on, four off, no matter what. And again, you know, is it good? In some ways, maybe, because now, you know, some of the more beginner intermediates had this extra court, but then you just took away your culture to play any advanced players. And now they all went to just set up private games. So it's a pretty touchy subject. It's trying to figure out the balance between how do we make space for everybody to feel like they can play and have a culture where you can help beginners and intermediates get into the sport, but also have the chance to play advanced players.
Right. And the sad thing is, you know, it's a good thing and a bad thing. The sport's growing so fast. This problem is going to remain a problem. Yeah. You know, there's an increasing need for courts in communities because the number of players is just overrunning, you know, the number of courts. And I think that, you know, each park or each kind of community does it a little bit different. But I think that, you know, the idea is that when we start getting more courts, the wait times maybe go down, and then maybe people don't get as frustrated with challenge courts. But I think that people are frustrated because they have to wait, not yeah. because there's a challenge court.
Yeah. So we'd love to know what you guys do in your kind of hometown. Like, do you guys have a challenge court? Do you like your current system, or how would you like to see that change? Go ahead and comment in the comments below.
All right. Should we go to the next one?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So this next kind of forum post that we found comes from the wonderful, wonderful world of Reddit. A tongue twister.
I love it.
Wonderful world of Reddit. And this post is titled, or this thread is titled, Stop Apologizing, Mental Health and Pickleball. Mm. So I'm going to kind of summarize it for you. But basically, this person says there's no need to apologize when you've done nothing wrong. You know, none of us are intentionally hitting the ball into the net or missing. And so what this post is talking about, I'm sure if you've played pickleball long enough, you've played with a player that apologizes to the nth degree. You know, they kind of over apologize, they hit it into that, oh, I'm so sorry. And there's kind of this, basically this article kind of goes, or this thread kind of goes into the mental health aspect of over apologizing. So I want to hear, have you ever played with somebody that apologizes too much, and how do you think that contributes to kind of the atmosphere on your team?
You know, I really try to be a really gracious partner. Something I tell most partners that I play with is I always say, like, no sorries. And I say it really lightheartedly, like, because I know in my mind that everybody's trying their best. Nobody wants to lose a point. Nobody wants to hit an out ball. Nobody wants to mess up. And so, you know, I really try my best to keep a culture on my side of the court that's like, hey, no sorries. You're doing great. And look, I slip out a sorry here and there. And sometimes it just like comes out. I don't know what that is, or it's like a reflex sometimes, but, I really try to create, again, that culture of, I'm like, you know, don't apologize. I know you're doing your best. I want you to know I'm doing my best. And I just feel like it kind of helps, I don't know, it helps keeps things positive.
Right. Okay. So hypothetical scenario. Okay.
Yeah.
You're playing with a player for the first time, first time partnership at a rec night. They miss 10 shots in a row.
Okay.
Do you want just like a little apology at least? Just to show that they care?
I don't know. I mean, at that point, I don't want people to feel bad. Like, I really don't. If it's rec night and we're just out having fun, like, and here's the reality. I've had really bad days out on the court. I've been playing pickleball a long time. I've had some really terrible off days, and I know what it's like to have a partner that rolls their eyes at you or points out every single mistake that you do wrong, and it's demoralizing. And even if my partner makes a million mistakes, and it's sure, it's frustrating. I don't like to lose, but regardless of not liking to lose, I'm not going to be a jerk.
Yeah, you know? I think it's golden rule, you know, treat others how you want to be treated. I think that's huge. And I think, and I was playing at this, that the park that we were referring to earlier, I was playing on the advanced side. I think you were like on your way, but I was going to hop in the game before you got there. And somebody from the beginner side came over and they put their paddle in with mine and we got up for a game. And right before the first point, right before the serve, the guy looks at me and said, "Hey, this is my first time on the advanced side, just so you know." And I was like, it was kind of endearing, you know. Yeah. I was like, "Yeah, of course, man. Like, let's do it. Let's run this. Let's win this game." Well, we lost 11-2. did miss quite a few balls, and he was over apologizing. And I could tell, you know, I'm not one to engage in lengthy conversations during a game. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of want to have those conversations after the game. But I could tell after the game he felt really bad.
Yeah.
Because he was like, because again, I had just waited probably 30 minutes because of the paddle system. And he was sad. You know, he felt bad that, you know, I think I probably hit two or three balls the whole game. And mm-hmm. he did miss a lot. But I have to realize, like you're saying, we all have those days on the court. And yeah. If I don't let him get in a game, how's he ever going to
totally
play against better players, you know? And so I pulled him aside and I was like, "Hey man, just so you know, I obviously don't like to lose, but I was just being honest. Like, obviously don't like to lose, but I'm in no way hold this against you."
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the culture we have to create. Cause if not, we don't want to be fear driven in anything that we do. We don't want to motivate and drive people based, you know, use fear to influence people. I'm a big proponent that we use love to influence people, not fear. And so I think that we have to carry that into the pickleball court, because I think all of us are either being motivated by fear or motivated by love. And I think that I want to be on the love side of that. So great to remember, treat others how you want to be treated. But this is a big one. You know, I do hear apologies quite a bit. And I think what we were kind of getting at is just keeping in mind, what culture do we want to create on the court? You know, and how do we create that culture, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of that, this is kind of a good question. I'm curious at what you would say. Don't name names, but like, what if you can think of one person that you were like, "Man, I just loved playing with this person." What was it about them that made you love playing with them as a partner?
You know, I can think of a few, but I think when people are smiling a lot mm-hmm. on the court, and I can tell they're just having a good time. It's one thing to play with someone who's really competitive, mm-hmm. and I don't mind that because I'm competitive. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to play somebody that's really smiley and like there's 0 ounce of competition in them.
Yeah.
But when somebody like really wants to win, but they also, you can tell that if they don't, their world's not going to be over. I really enjoy people that smile on the court. You can tell that being on the court's the best part of their day.
Yeah.
And, I just love that. I love when people are very, you know, smiley, and you don't have to be smiley to be a good player, or you don't, you know, that's not a requirement to play pickleball, but man, I love when people smile. What about you? What do you think of when you think of a good partner?
I think I love, like, you know, I think one of my biggest pet peeves is when people point out every mistake you make. Like, I'm like, I know I made a mistake. Like, yeah. I don't need to be told I made a mistake after every point I make a mistake. That's probably my biggest pet peeve. But I love when people say like, "Oh, that was a great shot," or "Oh, good drop," or "That was a great drive." You know, things like that. That's like super, super great to be with like on the court.
Yeah,
someone super positive and really encouraging, and they point out everything you do right over everything you do wrong.
Yeah, I think I've noticed that you really thrive when people celebrate you. Like, I know that there's there's one of your friends from Orlando. You two, whenever you guys play women's doubles or something together, and I love watching you two because both you and her like celebrate the crap out of each other.
We freak out over every point.
And their eyeballs like pop out of their head. And I'm just like, I see them both and I can tell that they're just so full of joy. And a lot of that's because they're feeding into each other. And I don't think we realize this is a team sport. Like, I mean, obviously there's singles, but in doubles, like your partner does matter, right? Yeah. And I think that I've seen very good teams lose because they weren't firing on all cylinders. They were against each other and not for each other. I've seen really good teams go down, and I've also seen teams that were just okay win because they were seemingly having the best time together.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a real thing.
And guys, we'll do our best to try to put the links to some of these articles, forums, you know, in the description, or have a place where you can access them in case you want to go read any of the stuff that we talk about in the episode. But like we have mentioned in previous episodes, we really want to hear from you guys. So if you have any questions, we want to do some Q&As once we get to that point. So feel free to ask questions in the comments, or feel free to just give your feedback. But before we wrap up, we do want to get into a tip of the day or a tip of the episode. And so today's tip, I was kind of thinking, I think we're going to alternate tips. If you want to piggyback on this, feel free to go ahead. But I was thinking about it. What's a good tip I could kind of leave the listeners with? And one of the things that I feel like is really big is learning how to dink to the middle effectively. I think especially when you're playing on the left side, it becomes important to not just get married to a cross court shot. A lot of players, especially at like the 4-0 level, love to just dink cross court. It's dink cross court, dink cross court. But they fail to realize that the wider that you pull somebody on a court with your dink, the more options you give them. Now they can either go down the line or they can come back to the middle. Or if you can dink to the middle, especially when you're on that left side, they only really have one option, and that's if they're going to attack, they have to attack middle, because if they were to attack to the sidelines, that ball's probably going out. So I think a great thing to think about if you're on the left side is not, and I'm not talking about just dinking toward the center mid-court line, but if you're on the left side, to try to dink toward the inside foot of the player right in front of you. So the player that's on the right side of the opposing team, or the player that's right in front of you, because it puts them into that land where now they don't know who's going to take it. And you're forcing either the person in front of you to hit a backhand, or the person on the left side, on the opposite side of the court, they have to decide if they're going to come over, and it then opens up that that angle that you're looking for. So I think that really took my game to the next level. I think when I was kind of more at like the 4-0 level, I just, anytime I played the left, I was backhand cross court dinking, trying to pull people way out wide. But it can get you in trouble more than you think. So long-winded tip, but the tip of the day, I would say learn how to dink toward the inside foot, especially when you're on the left. If you're on the right, you kind of have to be careful, because it can be easy for that left side player to reach in and speed that ball up. So if you're a left side player, focus on inside foot, person in front of you. Tip of the day.
I like it.
Have anything to add?
No, maybe just if you guys ever want to look at this in really good, like in real life action, I think Ben and Colin Johns are one of the most dominant teams in men's doubles pickleball. They've been winning most of the tournaments from 2020 till now. And they actually probably do some of the best job I've seen at utilizing that inside foot dink. So if you want to go look at it in real time action, I would suggest to go check that out.
That's a great idea. Great idea. And if you guys would like any tips, on dinking or how to get better, be sure to check out the YouTube channel at playpickleball.com, or Selkirk TV has some great resources as well. But guys, we really appreciate you guys listening in, and we look forward to rolling with this on the next time.
We'll see you later.